I'm Estradios Gavis. I am a professor at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy. I am also a PhD student at Brooklyn Polytechnic, where I'm working on hardware security and various other random things, forensics, anonymity, kind of annoying my professor in general. But so my talk is on asymmetric defense. It's kind of my experience and the experience of running a small, unfunded IT shop, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. The gist of this talk is that if you're running a small shop, you don't have the necessary resources and time and people and all that to do what is supposed to be done properly. At the Merchant Marine Academy, we compete in this cyber defense exercise, and in that there's other DoD academies and stuff like that. They got lots of funding. They do a great job. They can follow proper procedures and all that. At the Merchant Marine Academy, we're kind of left to our own. We don't get any funding. We're kind of we're out there by ourselves. So this is kind of my experience in teaching the students try to like get the best bang for their buck and all that sort of stuff. We do in general break a lot of what is considered to be best practices. That's because best practices are generally designed for programs and places that have resources and time and money and where there's a buy-in from whatever administration for security and doesn't just look at it as a kind of an excess unnecessary space. So if you're in that group, which I'm guessing some people are, so what I hope that you take away from this is that simplicity is the only way you're going to get by. If you try to make it complicated, if you try and make it, buy in some solutions that you don't really understand, you're not going to be more secure. You're going to spend more money. You're going to be more confused, but you're not going to be more secure. You need to understand what you have and do it well. If you can't provide a service you understand, then don't provide that service, I guess, or really try to figure out a simple solution for that. It's key. It's very key that you get it to the basic possible configurations. So, and don't be afraid of your systems, right? It's often easy to kind of be intimidated by the equipment or a vendor's telling you not to mess with it. If a vendor's telling you not to mess with his equipment, then dump the vendor and get it, put in something else. So, a little more about the academy. It was established to train merchant mariners. Most people don't know what the hell a merchant marine is. They're the guys that run those big giant ships, the ones that ferry in all of that crap that you buy, they're under the Department of Transportation, which is different than the other academies. The other academies are under DOD and DHS, and it's the smallest of the five service academies. In that, you've heard of West Point, you've heard of Annapolis, you haven't heard of Merchant Marine Academy, unless of course you're in the shipping industry, then you know what the hell they are. They'll graduate and they'll go on to do various things. The standard kind of life of a merchant marine is to come through the academy and end up as a Navy reserve, but they'll end up in Coast Guard or whatever, active duty. This year we had some foreign participation in this cyber defense exercise, which was nice. The Royal Military College of Canada, we got to participate. They're a really good group of people, and in general, all of the people that participated are really great. There's a lot of sharing and a lot of kind of support for amongst all of the academies. Even though we razz each other, even though we think that maybe Coast Guard Academy isn't so great, but we do actually support one another, and it's a good environment. I'm glad that the academy is participating. It's a good learning experience. So we have postgraduate schools, we have and undergraduate schools. The postgraduate schools don't participate in the prize per se, but they're just there to kind of lead the bar and whatnot. So In the CDX, the midshipmen were responsible for setting up all sorts of mock enterprise systems. They're given a budget, and that budget was to reflect not only the cost of, say, hardware, but also the cost of labor to administer that particular service. For instance, we couldn't just say, hey, it's a free virus scanner, a free firewall on every single workstation, because these workstations are supposed to represent hundreds or thousands of computers. So it would be unreasonable to kind of walk around and administer them individually. So they were trying to reflect the costs of a large group and various other things along those lines. So even though all of the products are open source generally, and therefore or free, they're not free to implement, not free to use. They do have a cost in terms of operational costs. And then they have to try and administer this network that they were given after they cleaned it up and during a live exercise where the NSA is attacking them. They're also, in that same time, they're given these injects where they have to do various things, change DNS configurations, respond to a general's orders or something along those lines, and the standard reporting mechanisms, you know, to say we're under attack at this point, we want to block these IPs. So they're trying to model the CDX as closely as possible to what you might find in kind of a real world experience. We want to get as good of a practice as possible for the midshipmen and cadets. So this is our network. This is by far the simplest of the networks that were out there. And again, this kind of goes to the idea that I'm trying to push here, is that you want simplicity if you don't have the manpower. You can't probably see any of this, which is okay. This is just a general network. We have over here, we pile on, we have our routing and our external DNS over here. And then internal, we have an AD over here with an internal DNS, so we're separating those two out. And then over here, we pile on all of our services into one machine, and we kind of lock that down as best we can. We have our web server, our IAM, and our database all over there. And we separate it out over from the rest of the network. So we have a VLAN switch over here and some monitoring, a little monitoring station over there. So some of the cost trade-offs that we went through, or the midshipmen went through, were in saying we could have had multiple machines and multiple servers, but from an administrative point of view, at any given point, we might only have one midshipman, one student in the shop watching the network. So again, you can't really have, well, you could, but it would probably be easier to just concentrate everything onto one box. Yeah, it puts all of our eggs in one basket, and yeah, it's kind of risky, but if you're running a shop with just one person, you're kind of living in a risky world anyway. So it's, again, not necessarily the best of plans for everyone, but it's a solution for keeping these costs down. It keeps monitoring down, keeps administration down. You don't have to worry about trying to patch a number of different machines. You can just focus on the one machine and make sure that's running very well. So we made some mistakes, obviously. We had some last-minute course corrections, and we'll talk about those a little later, but primarily we started off using a lot of these GUI interfaces to do the administration and all that, and then we ultimately transitioned to using FreeBSD for most of the infrastructure. So just to kind of get you an overview of some of the other things that we covered here is it's good to learn multiple operating systems. And again, I'm not really saying anything that's earth-shattering here. I'm just trying to get a basic understanding of IT and security out to everyone here. And to say that learning multiple operating systems is important. You want to know more than just Windows. You want to be able to say, have more than one tool in your bag. You want to, there's multiple tools out there, and you should understand them. FreeBSD, Ubuntu, Gentoo, there's a whole bunch of them. So kind of play around with them. Don't put them in production until you're comfortable with them, but get out there and just play with it. You know, I'm sure everyone has an old machine out there that they can play with and they can start messing around with, and you certainly should do so. When you feel comfortable, you can roll it into production. That's kind of, you know, again, not rocket science, just keep it simple. You want to keep it simple. NSA puts out a bunch of pretty good guides on how to secure a number of different things. What they don't do is they don't keep the URL very consistent, so I'm not certain if this is still the one. They refer to it as the snack and various other things, and so they should probably solidify on one URL or at least redirect from the old ones. So you can usually find them if you dig around on the website anyway. So even though I'm a big proponent of Linux and I use it for as much as I can, you can't as an administrator ignore Windows. It's just the world we live in, and that's okay. You know, it's a good operating system for what it does, and that is it keeps people comfortable in an environment where they've been for some time. We use group policies. Make sure you use that. Obviously, if you're running a network, use an AD and join it into a group. So the group policies will allow you to administer a number of the workstations at the same time, and you're not walking around to each one, and you can push them down all at the same time. Yeah, it's good stuff. But don't get too carried away with it, because there's a tendency to, at least when you leave midshipman, to lock down a network, or you get kind of all excited about security, you start locking everything down, and then pretty soon none of your users can do anything. So, and you know, you want to make sure that you're locking it down, but not so that it's completely unusable. And in terms of other Windows, Windows OS that they used in this exercise was XP, but we did have some Vista in there, and it was okay. From a security point of view, it actually is okay. From everything else, kind of not so good, I don't think. So Windows 7 seems to be doing better in a lot of other ways. So hopefully, it will continue to get better. So you want to, again, keep the tools simple. We found troubles, we wanted to track them down. Sysinternals are free tools. You can download them. You can use them. They're great. Process explorers let you see what's going on. And even, you know, what's important when you're administering a network, you have to understand what your baseline is. What is good versus what is not good. So get a good machine, a machine that you trust, one that you just built and you know isn't owned. And just look at what it looks like normally with Process Explorer. What's the normal network traffic that it generates, and kind of get a feel for that. Once you're comfortable in there, then you can start noticing, well, this is kind of not behaving well. It seems slower than normal. It has too many processes running. I don't know what these are. So it kind of gives you a it's helpful in getting you a baseline. Firewalls, you want to use kind of the internal one is good. CoreForce, if you're familiar with it, is really good. It can really lock everything down. And it's a very solid product. But it can also make everything completely unusable too. So again, you don't want to get too carried away with it. Antivirus stuff is obviously a no-brainer as well. You want to run that, but don't get too carried away with these scans. I've seen these administrations set up so that it's scanning like all files all the time. It just thrashes the hard drive the entire day, and you're really not any more secure. You know, if it's scanning the whole day, you're still not going to be protected from your zero days. You're still not going to be catching like every single vulnerability. So you got to keep it all in perspective. You don't want to get too carried away with tools that aren't really designed to catch everything instantaneously. So keep it under, you know, keep it reasonable. If the hard drive is thrashing, it's going to be the number one reason why your users are going to complain, because their system is slow because their hard drive is like spinning all the time. I wanted to say a few things about passwords. Passphrases is what I advocate. Passphrases are like long phrases. They can be gibberish phrases. They can be sensible phrases, even although that's not ideal. If you choose, like, say, four or five different words that are somewhat related in your mind, you build a passphrase. That's a lot better than a password that's just a random letter, random letters. You can make passwords very long in that way. You can easily get a 20 or 30 character password. And in terms of password security, you know, size does matter, so you want to do that. So passphrases, you know, and it also keeps it easier to remember. And don't get too crazy with swapping out the passwords. I know there's some requirements out there that you have to change your passwords every 90 days and all that. I don't necessarily believe that's actually making us more secure, but if you have to follow that, at least try and make it as painless as possible. You can remember a sentence a lot better than you can remember jumbled words. So you don't need to necessarily advocate the funny characters and all that sort of stuff, although that's a good idea. In terms of a small network, if you're building a network, you have this option only in small networks. If you want to build real networks or VLANs. I like VLANs. I think having a switch that's centrally managed that you can control a bunch of different ports on is a good idea. It doesn't have to be crazy expensive. You can get a very reasonable gigabit managed switch nowadays, you know, with a decent number of ports without breaking the bank. So you should definitely look into that. But if you have a bunch of little switches lying around and you want to use them, that's cool too. You know, you can certainly model a VLAN and a real network and a VLAN network all in the same thing. But not if your network is too big, right? If it's a large network, forget it. But in the small network, you can definitely get away with it. So. From the application security point of view, our applications, firewalls, gateways, there's a couple different products out there. There's a number of them. We played around with Monowall, IPCOP, Untangle, PFSense, a couple others. They're pretty good. They're really good, actually. Monowall is really great, and we were actually using that all the way up until the very end when we dropped it for FreeBSD. Untangle is actually really impressive and has a lot of different things. Seems to be easy to administer. The danger in these interfaces and these tools is that you don't really have a full understanding of what's going on in the background. But from a learning point of view, they're very good. They do the basic configurations, and you can kind of get a sense of what is there and how a system should be set up. And so then when the students migrated off onto the FreeBSD system, ultimately, they had a better understanding. They felt more comfortable with the system in general, so that when they moved to the FreeBSD, there wasn't any problems. They understood what was going on. So check these out. They're all very good. They're all free. You can all download them and check them out and play with them. On the application side, we used eBox, again, all the way up until the end, and when we dropped it in favor of FreeBSD. Webmin is also another possibility. It's been around for a lot longer than eBox. It's not as pretty, but eBox certainly is good. Again, it sets up a lot of different things for you, and you can kind of get the basic setup without a lot of pain. You know, not a lot of pain. And again, Untangle is also available in this space too. Untangle is probably one of the better tools to kind of wrap everything up. I like to kind of diversify a little bit. So if you're going to do it for your routing and all that sort of stuff, then I'd probably try to pick something else just to kind of get a little diversity. If there is a vulnerability in the UI and the environment, then you might have yourself in a lot of trouble. Unless, of course, you're concentrating it all into one box, and then, you know, again, you know, you have a single, you know, you get a single point of failure anyway. You might as well at least make your administrative abilities easy. So at the academy, we did in good spirits of what the government can do was we hired a Russian to help us out. So Boris is one of the guys at the at Poly, and he's a kind of a FreeBSD freak, and so he really understands what's going on and is comfortable and happy to teach and kind of help others out. So we brought him in, and in short order, a day or two, he had the midshipmen kind of convinced that, hey, FreeBSD is the way for them. They felt comfortable based off of what they had done with the other tools, with MonoWall and pfSense and all that, that they didn't feel too burdened by FreeBSD. So don't be afraid of it. So in comparison of the two, when we got to it, we couldn't do a few things. The natting was a little more difficult, or it was simpler under FreeBSD. All of these things we could do with the other environment, except the split DNS environment. We wanted to segment the DNS environment, and it wasn't as easy to do in Ebox and MonoWall. We couldn't quite get that working right. Under FreeBSD, obviously, those sort of things are somewhat easy to do. So there's lots of good guides out there, and you know, you can do this. FreeBSD is, you can route to VLANs, you can do all sorts of stuff like that. It's very good. We also use an environment of PF and IPFW so that we have a better blend of for natting and for firewalling, and that's just a comfort. You know, one syntax is easier to understand than the other. So FreeBSD, we also did for the application server, we replaced Ebox. Ebox is really great, again, up until the point where we're like, well, we're not quite certain how we wanted to set it up. So during the actual gameplay, we moved the Ebox down to the backup machine, and we moved FreeBSD into our primary machine. So obviously setting up web server and email and database and Jabber, which is the IM client, for those of you who don't know. Pretty straightforward. Again, you know, you shouldn't be too don't be afraid of FreeBSD. So, in general, like I said, what I wanted to get across here is, you know, we have a quick talk. I had a quick talk. So, we want to keep it as simple as possible. We don't want it to be complicated. If you don't understand it, it's not secure at all. Security is not about one thing. You need to jump in, get your feet wet, and really start understanding what's going on. If you don't understand it, it's not good. Don't panic, just do it, right? So that's more or less what I was trying to get across. If you're out there, you hack boats or you hack students or something, let me know. I'd be happy to talk to you. And I'm always willing to listen to suggestions. If you think you have a better idea in terms of small network administration, it's always welcome. Hope everyone enjoyed the talk. Thanks.